Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
College football recruiting, Greg Biggins, national recruiting analyst for 24/7 Sports. Does recruiting ever end? It feels like with the early signing period that this thing is just never ending. Has this made your job more difficult, Greg Biggins?
I couldn't tell if that was a rhetorical question or not. No, it never ends. It's year-round. And even after the February 7th signing day, man, it's right back at it with the juniors. And you're going to see probably a handful of kids in late February, maybe even March, will make their decisions. And I think what you'll see now is obviously with the early signing period, people can take players can now take official trips in the spring. So for these college coaches, shoot, man, they're going to be right back at it, hosting kids officially as early as March, April, I think is that time frame for that. So, yeah, kind of a long-winded way to say it never ends. It's a 24/7 year cycle. It's crazy, absolutely crazy right now.
The coaches, your consensus now as you talk to coaches, are they in – any kind of consensus on if they like the early signing period or not? And are the recruits in any kind of consensus, or is it kind of all over the board?
All over the board. I think I was way off. I was wrong on my assessment. I think I even told you, I bet maybe 50 to 60% of the committed kids will sign the early period. It was end up being closer to 80. So I think right now a few schools were caught off guard in terms of they thought there'd be more players still left on the board for them to kind of go and poach. And so I think coaches are okay with it. As I said before to you, I just don't think they like the timing of it, having it just 7 weeks apart between the December and the February. So I think ideally they would like to see kind of move to late summer, kind of spread these things out a little bit more. And I think for the players, it almost feels like December was the signing period with, like I said, 80% of them signing already. So I don't think they really saw a difference. It just maybe sped up their decision a little bit and then, put some pressure on some kids to go ahead and make a decision or otherwise maybe have their offer pulled, which that wasn't a good thing for them. But I think for the most part, they kind of just treated that December signing period like it was the February one.
Greg Biggins, national recruiting analyst, 24/7 Sports with us. Oregon's decision to promote Mario Cristobal was rooted largely in, hey, we'd like to hold that recruiting class. Now that you look at what he did he hold enough of it to make that argument solid, or is that still up in the air?
I mean, I think it's way too premature to see if, how about we, let's watch them coach. Let's see them, play in the field for a couple of seasons. Then we can kind of determine if the hire was the right move or not. And I'm not sure that's what you're even asking. But, from a recruiting standpoint, no, it was definitely the right move if that was your main goal, was to kind of keep the class together and kind of keep that continuity. I like their class. They're still in on a lot of kids. I know people are probably impatient if you're a Duck fan, just kind of saying, where's these receivers? We need a couple of receivers. I think they're coming. They're still waiting on Jalen Hall, still waiting on Isaiah Crocker, Devin Williams. Those guys are all still on the board, and I think they have a good shot with each of them. But for the most part, they kept that class together, and it's a really good class. So, to answer the question, yeah, I think everything's been, going as well as expected.
We're talking to Greg Biggins. He is the national recruiting analyst at 24/7 Sports. Oregon State had kind of an interesting case where Jonathan Smith came in late. He is out recruiting like crazy this last week. They feel to me like, they may not have done as well early as some others, and they're trying to use that as an advantage. And I don't know how that could be an advantage. How is that an advantage?
I don't know either, to be honest with you. I think I told you the last time we talked was, you know, if you're Jonathan Smith, you don't want to reach. So I think they probably felt like, and maybe, again, I don't want to speculate for what Jonathan was thinking, but the advantage for him could be, you know, we got a lot of spots. These are going to be our guys. We can evaluate, as opposed to kind of coming in and maybe Oregon State, if they had a, you know, signed a big group of guys, maybe guys that were already committed, they didn't want to push out. Now you're kind of stuck with maybe a handful of players that you don't want, you don't like, and but, you know, you feel obligated to take them. I think they're in a situation where, you know, they have a ton of spots available. They can really be picky. They can be, you know, they can kind of choose if they like the kid or not. And if not, hold those spots, hold those offers for next year. You know, don't reach, don't take guys who can't play for you.
Yeah, and I think that may be what he's saying is, look, we want the right kind of players at Oregon State. We see Stanford having success with some academic standards still in place there. Is Stanford, in your opinion, is it unique nationally in that you got a student athlete like Bryce Love who comes back for another year, and largely that's probably rooted in, look, he's getting a Stanford education. He wants to be a doctor someday.
No, 1,000%. There's no one like Stanford. And obviously we can sit there and say, okay, Notre Dame, Northwestern, great academic schools, but Stanford's on a completely different level. There's not another school in the country that Bryce Love doesn't leave early for, except for Stanford. And that's why those kids go to Stanford, is to get that degree, to get that education. It's such a unique spot. Obviously, the way they recruit is so different. You have to be accepted into the school. You know, I know people will kind of say, oh, that's not true. You know, if they really want you, they can get you in. That's not true at all. I can give you tons of examples every year of players who want to go to Stanford, high-quality kids who end up at places like Notre Dame and USC and UCLA, who literally could not pass admissions to get into Stanford. So it's a unique school. You know, the pluses and minuses are there in terms of academics. They can't, you know, it's not a level playing field for them. They can't recruit most of the guys that are, you know, in the top 200, top 300. But the guys they do get are committed athletes who are going to probably stay longer than they would any other school as well. So you definitely have your pluses and minuses. But, it's such a unique situation with Stanford.
Can you draw any early returns on Chip Kelly at UCLA? How's he done recruiting? And how does that sort of line up for his short-term success, long-term success?
You know, he's been extremely intriguing in the way he's gone about recruiting. He hasn't had the success, and I use that word loosely because I think in their minds it's going to be successful. But I think a lot of people thought, you know, he's got such a national brand. He's really well-respected. People, you know, will consider him, you know, a top five coach in America for his success at Oregon. I think they thought he'd come in and just start poaching these top kids. You know, he'd look at the top 100 and go, I'll take you, and people would flock there. But that hasn't happened. What he's been doing is he's actually been going and recruiting a lot of under-the-radar kids from all over the country. You know, guys that, you know, were two and even three-star guys, not heavily pursued by other schools, and he's tripping these kids in, and he's basically kind of, not saying it's arrogance, but I think he believes so strongly in his ability to evaluate and develop that he doesn't care, and never did care, but he didn't care about rankings or stars. He's going after guys that maybe they don't have, you know, 25 offers. Maybe they're not the most highly pursued kids, but if he feels they fit his system, that's all he cares about. So I think the national buzz won't be there on signing day in February because they're going to be like, who's these guys? So he'll sign four or five guys that people will probably have no clue who they even are. But I think he likes them, and I think he feels like that's all that really matters right now. As long as he likes them, he doesn't care about anything else.
Greg Biggins, national recruiting analyst, 24/7 Sports. When you see the rankings come out and you look what the Pac-12 teams are doing, is there anybody who is recruiting above where you expect them to recruit? You know, what I mean is there somebody where you go, hey, look, I like this team and the talent they're getting, and it surprises me a little bit?
You know, not really. I would say, you know, I think I said after the early signing period, I think Washington State was having their best class in a long time. They were top five, and you never see Washington State rated in the top five. They're usually around 9, 10, 11, oftentimes even 12. So for them to have a top five class is was kind of, I would say, a little surprising, only because we're not used to it. I would say, you know, in terms of surprises, I would say ASU being, you know, ranked at the bottom. I think they're 11 or 12 was a little surprise. You see them. But, again, I think they have a smallest class right now. They have a lot of spots to fill. I think they're going to end up closing pretty well, especially out here in Southern California. you know, their best assistant coach hire from a recruiting standpoint was probably Antonio Pierce, who's the former head coach at Long Beach Poly High School. And Antonio has been really aggressive offering, you know, not just a couple of his guys that played for him at Poly, but going into, you know, Sarah High School and getting, you know, a Merlin Robertson, who's a top 150 linebacker nationally. I think they're going to probably end up with him. Ashari Quaswell, who played for him at Poly, they look really good for him. And you know, going to Narbonne High School and getting that Darian Butler, who I think will play for him. So I know they're going to close strong. They're making some, you know, doing really well in the Southern California area. That's largely because of Antonio Pierce and those SoCal ties that he had the last 4 or 5 years being out here coaching.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Greg. You know, you get Washington State and you have Tyler Helinski's suicide. I texted a little with Mike Leach. I told him, you know, how terribly sorry I am. And I think Mike Leach has a good heart. And he, you know, he could tell he was bothered and moved by this. And this will affect him. Does it affect recruiting with parents going, you know, and I know it's a weird question to ask, but it crossed my mind.
That's a great question. I never really thought of it that way. I'm assuming your meeting, is it going to affect it? Like, you think players are going to want to stay closer to home?
I just wonder if my kid can play, do I go, oh, wow, this Washington State quarterback who took his own life, and we don't know the reasons why, do I feel great about sending my kid there? Is it even a factor? Is it an abstract factor? Do parents wonder those kinds of things? I don't know. It crossed my mind.
Oh. Yeah, no. I honestly, I don't think it will at all. I don't think anyone's going to say, oh, this kid committed suicide because he went to Washington State. Therefore, I don't want to send my kid there. I think it was, you know, it's even kind of hard for me to talk about because I know the family really well. But I think the only person I think I could see it affecting would be his younger brother Ryan, who's probably one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the 2019 class out here. I'm curious what he's going to do. I know Washington State was one of his top schools. And does he want to go to Washington State and kind of follow and be always kind of looked at as, hey, that's, you know, that's Tyler's younger brother. So I think it could affect Ryan. But from, you know, any other parent in the world, no, I don't think they're going to give it a second thought in terms of, you know, gosh, is there something happening in Pullman that right. I don't want to send my son there? Because I don't see that happening at all. If they shouldn't, because, I mean, obviously I think it was an isolated incident. What happened with Tyler was about the worst thing that could possibly happen, but I don't think it would have mattered where he was at. I mean, he was in a good situation. He was such a great kid with a great heart, and he was going to be the guy next year, and everything was positive with him. Talking to the family, everyone had no clue that he was obviously battling some inner demons, and I think those would have followed him no matter what school he was at.
All right, appreciate you. I appreciate you answering that question too, Greg. You're the best, and wish you a good weekend.
You too. Always good talking to you.
Greg Biggins, national recruiting analyst, 24/7 Sports. Not picking on Mike Leach there. I thought about it. And even Anna asked me, because I had texted Leach and I told him, I'm so sorry for what happened with you and your team and your quarterback. And Leach shot back. He said, it means a lot to me. And I said to Anna, she asked, you know, do you know what happened? I said, I texted with Leach and all I did was tell him I was sorry. And she says, do you think that affects recruiting? And, you know, I hadn't really thought of it that way. Does it affect a parent who goes, you know, I'm sending my kid to play in this program, or do we look at it as a isolated incident? And, of course, with something like suicide, everybody tries to make sense of it. And I'm not sure we ever can really make sense of something that's nonsensical. I don't think it will ever make sense. Leave it right here.
Don't settle, never ever fall metal. Engine running hotter than a boiling kettle. His job ain't a job, it's the BFT show. City to city, it's the cams on O.
On location, touring around the nation. Bald-faced truth, always on location. H.E. drink a finger, but a strong opinion.
J.C. does it best, cause he's number one minion. Ain't no walking.
It's sports, he's talking.
Going coast to coast, watching all the callers walk.
When you're off the clock, working right till 5.
BFT on the down code, kicking it live.
Friday, you know it's Friday because of those songs. The NFL apologizing today for a what appeared to be, well, let me just back up. An ad appeared this week on the NFL's various social media platforms, and Eagle fans are upset about it. So you have the NFC Championship game on Sunday. Minnesota plays Philadelphia, and it's wide open, right? Who's going to get to the Super Bowl? Well, maybe not according to the NFL's Facebook page, because on the NFL's official Facebook page, on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, they promoted a contest for Super Bowl tickets, and in the image, they featured Patriots quarterback Tom Brady and Minnesota quarterback Case Keenum with the Super Bowl 52 logo in the middle of them. Of course, the mock-up of this Super Bowl ad did not go over well with the Eagles. Eagles linebacker Nigel Bradham told a newspaper on the East Coast, they probably put that on purpose to give more bulletin board material. That's crazy. I've never seen anything like this before. If they want to pencil in the Minnesota Vikings, that's cool. We still have a game to play. He said it will not surprise them if they put that on the bulletin board. The NFL admitted it botched the Super Bowl ad. The Eagles fans, though, not forgiving them. Carl posted on the Facebook page, so you're basically saying my Eagles will be cheated. Tina Edwards says they will be disappointed when it's the Eagles versus the Jags. You heard it here first. And Alan says, did they play the games already? Wow. Emil also says, well, if the Super Bowl's fixed, I ain't watching. The NBA, we all kind of feel like the NBA, there might be some conspiracy theory there. I've never really felt that the NFL had the fix in. But that ad that appeared in front of the championship games has got people talking, at least on the eastern part of the country. By the way, it's really interesting because I have access to the back end of all of Advanced Digital, and these are all the advanced newspapers across the country. So I can look from market to market, from city to city, and see what the top stories are. That is the top story on the East Coast right now in what is an exceptional news day. So if you go like into the East Coast, and I go into, if I go into Oregon Live right here in the state of Oregon, the top story today is about the massive waves pummeling the Oregon coast. A man got swept out to sea in Depot Bay and is presumed dead. This number two story in the state of Oregon in the last 12 hours is Californians who are paying $9 a gallon for Oregon tap water. Did you know that there's Oregon, like that there's a market for Oregon tap water? Were you aware of this? Apparently, when people in Central Oregon turn on their taps, untreated spring water flows forth. And you pay about a penny a gallon in the central part of the state, like in Madras and Culver. But there's a company in California who's buying that water and selling it in giant glass jugs for $8.60 a gallon in L.A. and San Francisco. And the jugs are flying off the shelves. Like, people think they're getting, like, super tap water. And they're getting Madras water, you know? So the eclipse, not the biggest thing that went on in Madras this year. Should we all go to Madras and just buy, like, say, hey, you mind if we get some water out of your faucet? Be a cool thing.
I'm fine with the water I got.
I always think it's interesting when I travel around and people go, is it safe to drink the water? You ever hear that when you're traveling?
Yeah, no, I've heard that. But I think in some places it is a little less safe. And, you know, I actually am kind of picky about the taste of water. Like, sometimes I've been places that I do not like the taste of water.
They're calling it raw drinking water. Because it doesn't have fluoride in it. It's not treated. It's coming right out of the ground.
It's going to be the newest health kick.
Guy in San Francisco is quoted as saying, quote, it's a no-brainer. You have water that's processed through the earth, through natural processes. It's cleaned. And that water has memory. It has the memory of tumbling through the rocks. It has the micronutrients. And I believe it's alive. End quote. That's a guy who's paying $8.60 a gallon for water.
He sounds nuts.
I heard a comedian do a whole bit on water having memory. He said, like, if water has memory, he goes, I'm thinking about that when I'm in the shower. What is that water remembering? Don't look for raw water in Oregon stores, though. A few companies do sell untreated bottled water in the United States, and they use that Central Oregon spring water, but they don't offer it in the state of Oregon. So you can't buy Oregon spring water here because we know it's gimmicky. It's like coconut water. I got into coconut water for a while. Thought it was like healthier than regular water. And I once had a guy who had this machine. And this is how you know, like, I try to tell people, people are like, hey, you do a lot of endorsements, like you endorse, and I use all those products, and I use those companies. So if I'm talking about something, it's something I've used. But there was a guy who brought a machine to me, and he wanted to sell these machines. They would ionize the water. I have no idea the science between ionized water. But he said, here's this machine, take it home. I want you to use it, and then you can tell your listeners to use it. And the machines cost like $3,000, and people put them in their kitchen, and your tap water runs through the machine. It ionizes the water, supposed to make it healthier. And he was making the argument that, hey, it's healthier to shower with this water. It's healthier to drink this water. And so I went to my physician, and I said, tell me about ionized water. And he rolled his eyes, and he said, hocus pocus, mumbo jumbo. He said, you'll feel better because you're going to be drinking more water because you think it's healthier. And he said, but there's no science behind it. So I wonder if so I went back to the guy and I said, hey, I can't do this. I can't tell people to spend $3,000 for a machine that probably does nothing except make them feel like they're drinking healthier water, especially in the state of Oregon. Come on. So maybe water from the ground, like raw water, $9 a gallon. Maybe that's kind of the same mumbo jumbo. Alabama, Adriana, is the water in Alabama an issue? Do people talk about it? Like this, they do out here in California and stuff?
Not really. I don't think the quality was as good as it is out here, though. And that same goes for the air, too.
Like, my parents have drinking water in their house, but they're on a well, and I get that, because there's agriculture around them. They don't know, like, what chemicals are going into the groundwater and all that. So the drinking water they drink out of, like, Alhambra or whatever they drink. Do people do that in Alabama, or do they drink tap water?
I think maybe in the more rural areas, they probably have well water, but most of the people that I know either drink tap water or drink it through a filter.
The top two stories, by the way, I can find in Alabama, and they are, number one, Alabama, and Alabama's favorite Netflix show. I'll tell you what that is in a second. And the second most popular story today on the Alabama, is it called AL Live?
AL.com.
AL.com. I can see the back end of it, so I can see what the top stories are. The projected Alabama football depth chart for next season.
Not surprising.
That's it. But the favorite Netflix show in the state of Alabama. Do you know what it is? Oh, no, boy.
I have no clue.
It's not Orange is the New Black. It's not. Orange is the New Black is the top show in Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, but not in Alabama. It's not Star Trek Discovery. That's the top show in Oregon. Let me see here.
Black Mirror?
They're making me work for it. No, Black Mirror is Hawaii. Mm. Why do the Hawaiians like Black Mirror so much? Alabama's favorite show. They're not giving it to me. Hold on. I got to look for it. They're making me work for it. I'm going to have to click through. It is. What's the show called 3%? Because Washington, D.C. has the show called 3%. It's its top one.
I have no idea.
American Vandal, by the way, top show in Minnesota and Wisconsin for some reason.
Great show, by the way.
What is American Vandal? That's a kid. That's like a high school, right?
It's like a mockumentary almost. It's like one of those crime shows, but it's completely made up, and it's actually really well produced. I'm working through it.
The 15-year-old in our household auditioned for a role in that show. She went in for the audition, and I was a little surprised that they had her read, and the line that she read had profanity in it. Is it a profane show?
Oh, yeah. It's not rated.
All right. Alabama's top show is The Gilmore Girls. A Year in the Life of The Gilmore Girls.
That's so anticlimactic. That's terrible.
Sorry. Wyoming and Alabama. Wow.
That's on Netflix?
Yep.
I never got into that show.
What is The Gilmore Girls?
I know it's a mom and a daughter, but I literally know nothing else. I never got into it.
Sorry, Alabama. That was very anticlimactic. What's your favorite Netflix show?
My favorite Netflix show is Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, boy. You know that already. Is it already run its course? You just watching reruns or what?
I watch, I've probably rewatched every season like maybe 5 to 10 times.
Who do you identify on that show? Or like who's your person on that show?
There are certain qualities that I like out of Meredith Grey, but I really love Christina Yang. She is just like a badass.
There you go. You heard it here first. Alabama, Adriana likes Grey's Anatomy, and Alabama likes the Gilmore Girls. Leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.